The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's July the 26th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, Secretary Johans predicts a five-year lag time before cellulosic ethanol will have an impact on the nation's energy needs. And speaking of energy, or in this case, speaking out on energy, it has been tagged as the reason behind rising prices of food, not demand for corn from ethanol, but rather the rising price of energy. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, I'll tell you a bit about how the soybean breeder here on the University of Illinois campus expects farmers in the state and around the nation to have a new high-yielding source of cyst nematode resistance in varieties to plant in 2009. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at today's agricultural forecast for the weather. It all happens right here on WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The September soft red winter wheat at $6.51, 17 cents higher today. December futures at $6.69 were up 16.5. September corn futures 6 cents higher at $6.17.5. December at $3.33, up 5.75 for the corn. March contract at $3.48.5, up 6. And December next year up 3.5 at $3.83.75. August soybean futures 8.21.5 finished the day 6.5 higher. September futures at $8.29.75 were up 7. November's up 7.25 at $8.46.5, and the November next year at $8.91.5, up 6.5 for the day. August bean meal at $2.17.70, up $2.70. August bean oil down 3 at $36.59. At the Mercantile Exchange, August feeder cattle on the afternoon finished at $92.25, and they were down a nickel for the day. October live cattle, 35 cents lower, or rather higher, at 97.20. Now the feeder cattle, August contract at 116.35, up 50 cents. September's 20 higher at $117 and a nickel. August lean hog, 73.15. They're down 95 cents on the afternoon. Outside markets, crude oil trading at $74.82, down 1.06, and down $1.06 a barrel for the day. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 13,360, and it's down just about 425 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker, market analyst with ADM Grain Group, and he joins us from his Decatur office. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
You know, I'd like to start with the grains, but maybe we better check out that Dow Jones Industrial Average number and what you think it might mean. The last time we had something that was close to a 500-point drop was a pretty drastic day. Probably not nearly so bad this time around, given how much higher the Dow happens to be. But what do you make of it all?
Yeah, from a percentage point of view, I don't know if it's that big a deal. But any time, you know, a market drops as sharply as the Dow is, it's got everybody's attention. You know, I it's reacting to the slow housing starts or house sales. Fearing that, you know, one of the stronger parts of the economy is weakening. That could signal that we may have recessionary pressures ahead of us. So that right away, you know, sent the interest rates sharply lower in fear that we, you know, we need lower interest rates to maybe stimulate the currency or to stimulate the economy. So, I would say that, you know, from a trader's point of view, when you have big declines such as that in the stock indexes here, you look at the big declines that we saw here in the gold futures here, And, of course, we see some weakness in the energy complex. One always begins to worry what kind of ramifications that may have, maybe spill over into ag commodities, because a lot of these funds are positioned in several different sectors, and when one sector takes a significant or makes a significant move, a lot of times that generates some that they may have to liquidate positions in other sectors to meet margin calls and, you know, get their equity in line. So, you know, given what we see in the stock market here today, I thought the grains held up quite well. We did have, you know, a flurry of sell activity here before the close, and then we snapped back here right at the close. So we did close off our highs, but like I said, given what we see in the stock market, the grains held up pretty well here today.
Speaking of highs, you better talk about the wheat market just a bit.
Well, the wheat made 11-year highs, and it closed quite well. Now, I mean, we were limit up there for a second or two, and but we did close 17 cents higher, so we did close in the upper half of a limit range. So that is somewhat good from a technical perspective. Wheat's the clear leader. We had a tremendous weekly export sales number, I think the largest in modern time or largest in history. I think I saw something quoted across the wire, but it was a very big number. The trade was looking for a big number, but nothing as big as that. And then, of course, to follow suit with that, the USDA announced some more export sales, 100,000 tons here and there, and there's talk of more export business to come. So that was the driving force in the ag complex. Wheat's limited move began to perk up corn and soybeans, especially, I think, since we're kind of here at the end of the month. And like I mentioned this morning, a lot of times markets go opposite the dominant trend of the month in the last week of the month just on profit-taking from that position. In this case would be profit-taking from the short side, which gives us some underlying buying support here going into month's end.
Is your cyclic analysis on the wheat in sync with what's been happening at the Chicago Board of Trade?
Well, everything is cycles are still nothing's an exact science, and cycles are still interpretive. But you have to look at the wheat market as from a cyclical perspective, is that we're getting all right translations on cyclical links. That means the market is spending more time going up than going down within a specific cyclical length. So that is a very bullish situation that we've got in wheat, and that's why we're at 11-year highs. And the market is definitely worried about, you know, the European crop. It needs to encourage more plantings of wheat as we go into the fall planting season, and clearly I think that's going to be the case. Wheat prices are very attractive compared to what they've been in the past, and I think you're going to see producers move in that direction.
Yeah, and then how does it all play out into both the corn and the bean market? Beans, where we have a fairly large supply coming in at the end of this year, corn, where we're going to put a large supply onto the market by the time we get through the harvest season.
Well, the corn and bean markets are reacting to the good rain activity that we had earlier this month, you know, after a brief scare that maybe we would get into a period of hot and dry weather that would stress the crop and pull down yield expectations. The rains seem to have come just in time to kind of hold the crop rating levels steady. I guess I was a little surprised we didn't see an improvement in crop rating levels last week. And, of course, that's what got the market going up here this week, is that the rating levels actually didn't improve on the rains. They actually slipped back a point or two. Now we'll see kind of what happens here on Monday. But the corn and soybean market is just at the realization stage that we have a crop. I don't like to use the word made, but we're almost there. Now, I think the trade will argue, of course, the size of that crop. whether or not we've got 149 bushel yield or 155 bushel yield on corn, and whether, and of course beans, we still have several weeks to go before we could really get comfortable with big bean yield. So, but that's it's end of the month here, Tuesday. I would suspect that next week we're going to start hearing some private crop estimates start coming out, and the market, I think, is just going to have to kind of go through this phase in here going into the August crop report, unless weather is really makes some changes and is really hot and dry here next week. The market will probably spend some time, more time kind of chopping, backing, and filling.
Dan, we appreciate you being with us.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Thursday afternoons. We'll take a complete look at the ag weather forecast at the bottom of the hour. Pete Levitt will join us. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll update us on what's been happening in Washington, D.C., and other agricultural news for the day.
In agricultural news, House Democrats today say they have the votes to pass a broad five-year U.S. farm bill this week, despite the party's internal divisions and Republican outrage over tax increases on foreign-owned companies to pay for it. Farm state Republicans, who previously supported the bill, say they will oppose it because of a last-minute proposal to tax certain foreign-owned companies with U.S. subsidiaries. Those taxes would pay almost $3 billion toward a $4 billion total in food stamps and other nutrition programs that benefit mainly urban areas. Meanwhile, House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says if two House lawmakers are successful in passage of an alternative farm bill proposal in floor debate, that he will pull the bill in favor of extending the 2002 farm bill. Congressman Ron Kind of Wisconsin and Jeff Flake of Arizona are expected to offer an amendment that would ban subsidies for producers earning more than $250,000 a year while cutting $12 billion in farm subsidies over 5 years. Peterson made his comments behind closed doors on Tuesday to agricultural lobbyists. Debate on the farm bill, originally scheduled for today, has been delayed. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns says it will likely be 5 years before ethanol made from cellulose crops will make a significant impact on the U.S. fuel market. Johanns says the technology to make cellulose ethanol commercially viable may be available as soon as 3 years, but there are other factors involved. Among them, lead time to build plants and willingness of producers to switch from conventional crops like corn and soybeans to switchgrass or other cellulose inputs. Ethanol advocates continue to say, don't blame rising food prices on ethanol. Doug Durante is director of Ethanol Across America. Durante says the Consumer Price Index shows the real culprit is higher energy prices.
Energy is, according to our studies, our work, our research, by far a much greater cost factor on food. You've got to harvest crops. You've got to get them to processing, you've got to process them, you've got to get them to market. So that's where we're finding where the problem lies, and it's in high energy costs. It affects us in every way.
Durante says gas prices have gone up 75% over the past 16 months. The U.S. and Japan are expected to open another round of beef negotiations in late July or early August. An exact date is expected to be set by the end of the week. USDA is pushing Japan to drop a restriction that allows the U.S. to export only beef from young cattle under 21 months of age. Panama's legislature has ratified the trade deal with the U.S. The Congress in that country voted 58-3 in favor of the free trade agreement. The final agreement, signed by the governments of Panama and the U.S. in June, incorporates amendments derived from the negotiation between the Bush administration and congressional leadership. The U.S. Congress has yet to consider the FTA. If and when it does, it will do so under presidential fast-track trade rules that will allow an up or down vote without amendment. University of Minnesota researchers are looking at several stingerless wasp species from China as a way to control soybean aphids. U of M professor of entomology David Ragsdale.
The small stingless wasps that we're releasing are a group of 11 or 12 species that we've identified in Asia that in Asia control this aphid to the point where soybean aphid just is a non-pest throughout much of Asia.
And Ragsdale says researchers are hopeful that a particular species found in the northern latitudes of China can stand U.S. winters in states like Minnesota.
We specifically chose one that was cold hardy, and we're hoping that the inoculative releases we're doing this year, we're just trying to assess whether or not it'll survive the winter, whether it will reduce in very small areas soybean aphid. And this is a prelude to if we get positive answers to that, then we'll go into a mass rearing and release program.
Ragsdale says funding comes from the North Central Soybean Research Program. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find most of the daily ag programming. You can listen to it after the fact, or if you happen to miss it on the radio station at some point, or if you're outside of our listening area, we thank you for listening on the web. By the way, while you're on that website at willag.org, don't forget to sign up for our free weekend newsletter. It's right there. Just hit subscribe. Well, up next, researchers at Illinois are breeding aphid resistance into commercial soybean varieties. We'll hear more from the National Soybean Research Laboratory right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. The soybean aphid has plagued Midwestern fields for more than half a decade. To this point, farmers only had one way to control the insect. It had to be sprayed. Researchers at the University of Illinois have been working on the problem, and they've made quite a bit of progress, says soybean breeder Brian Deers.
So I've been collaborating with Glenn Hartman, who's a USDA pathologist here at the University of Illinois. And through this collaboration, we've identified some resistance genes to soybean aphids. And we've identified these sources of resistance, we've mapped resistance genes, and now we're putting these resistance genes into some adapted soybean varieties.
The U of I USDA collaborators map the genes, and then they use genetic markers to help move them around. These markers allowed Illinois plant breeders to quickly identify which crosses carried the aphid resistance gene.
Through traditional breeding that we're able to speed up using genetic markers. And this summer now, we've actually got some experimental lines that we're increasing that carry this aphid resistance gene.
That's right. Grow out of aphid resistant beans has already started. It means farmers in Illinois and around the Midwest will soon have another tool to battle the soybean aphid.
You know, if everything goes well, we could have seed available to farmers by 2009.
The aphid-resistant soybeans from the University of Illinois will be made available commercially and through the public sector. Some of the commercial releases will be Roundup ready. Interestingly, researchers, says Brian Deers, do not know how the aphid-resistant genes work.
You know, aphids are actually a sucking insect, so basically they go onto the leaves and they suck juice out of the leaves. We don't know exactly why they're resistant. We just know that if you put these aphids on the resistant plants, they don't produce as many offspring or survive as long as if they were on a susceptible.
Researchers at the University of Illinois say farmers can expect aphid-resistant soybeans to be available in 2009. That's great news. The not-so-good news, says soybean breeder Brian Deers, is that the little sucking insect has already begun adapting to the change. Apparently, he says, there are variations of the Asian soybean aphid, and some can overcome the resistance the breeders have managed to put into the soon-to-be-released soybeans.
What we've now discovered is that there's actually what's called biotype variation for the aphids in North America, which is something we didn't know anything about a year ago. And we've actually identified that there are some biotypes of the aphids that now can overcome the resistance gene we're working with. And what we've recently done, though, is we've identified a second gene which can control the biotype that overcomes the resistance gene that we've actually developed varieties with.
So, says the U of I crop scientist, the genetic variation in the soybean aphid means plant breeders will need to identify and then develop soybeans with a wide array of resistance.
What we had hoped originally was that there would not be much variation in the aphids in North America, at least initially, that it would take a while before this variation develops. But it's already happening, even before we've released a variety that carries the aphid resistance.
That resistance can develop because the aphid is very prolific. The sucking insect can produce more than a dozen generations in a single season. The research done by USDA and the University of Illinois to develop aphid-resistant soybeans is funded in part by the soybean checkoff. Those checkoff dollars, says Brian Deers, make up the very foundation of how agricultural research at the University of Illinois gets done. He says that's because they are a very, very stable form of funding.
Most of our research dollars are coming from the commodity groups, and that's been very helpful. It's been very stable, and that allows us to hire staff that stays on for long periods of time and gain experience and are therefore much more effective. So having this research dollars from the checkoffs, it really forms the core of our programs and allows us to get things accomplished.
Taxpayer dollars, of course, are important in the grand scheme of research funding, but they come and go so often that Deers says it's very hard to do continuous research when those are the only funding source.
That's right. It allows us to have the staff and have the continuous work so that we can work on these long-term problems year after year.
The continuous work is done with farmer-funded checkoff dollars. These are monies collected at the first point of sale of a commodity like pork or beef or corn and, yes, soybeans. Brian Heiser is a farmer from Minier, Illinois, and chairs a committee for the Illinois Soybean Association. He helps decide how the checkoff dollars are spent.
I think probably one of the most important things that farmers should be proud of their investments through the checkoff is the programs such as the VIPS program, in which we give information back to farmers, unbiased information about disease, cyst nematode, and other things that farmers just can't get otherwise. We also do research in soybean diseases that it's awfully expensive, and private industry will help take some of the germplasm that we develop, but they do not go and they are not doing some of the research that we are able to do and put into germplasm, and then they will use germplasm that we develop, such as aphid to resistance and some of those kinds of things that we develop.
Heiser contends this is because the university system, not just the U of I, but land grant and public institutions around the nation, are really trying to learn new things about animals and plants, like the soybean. The checkoff dollars allow the research to continue and can focus that research on farm-level applications. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
It's a Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL Urbana. Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us to take a look at the cash grain market this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Basis levels are looking like what for the day?
Well, we're pretty steady on the corn. Not much change, really, for the week here on corn. Bean basis is anywhere from 3 to 5 cents higher for the week, and you know, it's kind of like putting makeup on a pig. It doesn't make it pretty, but it's better than it was, I guess.
Yeah.
Wheat basis is a little bit better.
Yeah. What do you make of the rally in the wheat market as it has been happening in Chicago?
Well, I think that you, and we talked about this last week on Commodity Week a little bit there, I think you're seeing, because Chicago has the higher volume, you're seeing the volume of speculators come into the Chicago market and buying it there, and Kansas City, of course, is following along somewhat. But I think it's, you know, it's a fundamental driven situation, a demand-driven market. Now it's turning into it. It got started as supply, but when we saw these export sales today, I think you're seeing the users in the market take a little bit of panic and come in and try to get the stuff on the books.
It may push corn a little bit to the upside, too?
I think that, yeah, eventually corn and beans have to follow. And you could see today that the corn and beans pretty much, when the wheat started falling there before the close off the highs, the corn and beans fell right along with it. So
that may take a while. So let's talk a bit about something closer at hand as we head into the month of August, late July. What are your expectations?
Well, I guess I think that we've kind of, if we haven't found the bottom on the corn here, we've gotten close to support. This 320 to 365 area on December corn, I think, is a pretty fair range for the corn and soybeans. I think 820 still in play on the downside, and we could take a move back up there and try that $9 area on the November beans. I think you take advantage of the rebounds when you get the chance.
And what are your bids for the day?
287 on the cash corn, 741 on beans.
We appreciate it much.
Thanks.
Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. Joins us on Thursday afternoons. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Pete Levitt about the agricultural weather forecast. Your newscast come from the AM 580 staff comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. State regulators have turned down a Clinton doctor's proposal to build a surgical center for weight loss patients in Champaign. It's the fourth time this year that the Illinois Health Facilities Planning Board has issued an intent to deny a decision for a Champaign-Urbana project. The board has also denied proposals from Carle Foundation Hospital, Christie Clinic, and Leroy Dr. Thomas Pelura. In issuing the latest denial, the board said Dr. Sidney Rorscheib has 14 days to decide whether to appeal the ruling for Olympian Surgical Suites or resubmit his application with new information. A spokesman for 15th District Congressman Tim Johnson says Johnson hasn't decided how he'd vote on a bill to ensure continued and expanded funding for a federal program that helps states offer health care to more children. A health care advocacy group is mounting a lobbying effort to ward off a threatened presidential veto of more funds for the state's Children's Health Insurance Program, or SCHIP. The federal initiative helps fund Illinois' All Kids and Family Care programs, as well as Indiana's Hoosier HealthWise project. A proposed agreement between the Village of Savoy and the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District is not sitting well with many Savoy residents. The majority of those who showed up at a hearing last night on the proposal opposed the MTD's offer to keep from annexing many neighborhoods for at least 25 years while offering new service to some apartment complexes and stores. Illinois' public health director is reminding people in the state that it's still important to take precautions to avoid mosquito bites. State officials say mosquitoes have now been found carrying the West Nile virus in Lake, Sangamon, and Lee counties this month. Pumpkins won't be flying out of cannons this fall in the central Illinois community that dubs itself the pumpkin capital of the world. Morton pumps out 85% of the world's canned pumpkin and is known for celebrating the orange gourd. But this year, the Morton Chamber of Commerce has grounded its annual pumpkin chucking contest, which was scheduled for late October. The mayor, Norm Derflinger, calls the decision disappointing and says the contest helped put Morton on the map. Organizers say they canceled the event because it wasn't drawing the kind of competitors needed to bring in crowds. They're hoping it can be revived someday. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. And just one quick note there, Morton produces 85% of the canned pumpkin. And of all pumpkins in the nation, Illinois produces about half of them, jack-o'-lanterns and canned pumpkins. There's a difference between the two, but if you want to talk about Illinois leading, that's the place it leads. Let's talk a little bit about some great weather that's been leading us through the summer so far, and we have on hand with us Pete Levitt to discuss that. Hi, Pete. Good afternoon to you.
Yes. Hi, Todd.
Yeah, we had just a beautiful week here so far in Champaign-Urbana. Are we going to get more?
Yes, we will, but first we've got to get some showers, and of course showers aren't unwelcome at this time of year either, as long as they're brief and do the job. And we've got a weak system dropping down from the north through southern Wisconsin into northern Illinois today that's producing a few showers up north of Rockford, but those will probably dissipate as they come south. Of more importance, though, will be a cold front coming across the upper Midwest today. That will move through tomorrow, and I think there's enough moisture ahead of it to generate some pretty good showers and thunder showers. probably in the half-inch to three-quarter-inch amounts as it moves through. But it's just a one-day affair. That's Friday. Come Saturday, clears out, dries out, winter winds will be from the northwest, and temperatures will be getting up into the 80s. And looking through next week, we see nothing but dry weather through the week, and temperatures right around the seasonal normals, about a degree or two above, ranging from the low 60s at night to the upper 80s, maybe hitting 90 once or twice during the day. Just really perfect summer weather.
Well, we thank you for that update. We appreciate it much. Pete Levitt is a meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Thursday afternoons. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon and stay safe out there.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com. Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.